Hi, I'm John Ingold.
And I'm Sagar Baroshi.
And welcome to the Game Narrative Kaleidoscope podcast. Each week we open the Game Narrative Kaleidoscope book to a different article and we invite the author of the article on to the show to talk about their career, the craft of their writing and their chosen topic. This week we're really excited to have Anna C. Webster. Anna, hi, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm doing so well. Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. So firstly, for the benefit of people who might not have heard your name before or know how you fit into the wider world of games writing, can you just sort of outline who are you and what do you do?
Sure. So I am a freelance game writer and narrative designer. I am so fortunate. I've gotten to work with a ton of teams from like the teeniest, tiniest of indies to like absolute giants like Nintendo and Netflix. I'm sort of, you know, the more mercenary side of the narrative world. We roll onto a project and roll off into the sunset. I love it. I love what I do. And I also am the chair of the freelancing committee and a member of the organizing committee of United Video Game Workers, CWA, which for those unfamiliar is a union in North America for video game workers.
Amazing.
Okay. Very, very good, Anna. Well, we would love to hear more about quite a lot of this, but why don't we start with our topic? So the article you contributed is called Tell Me More About That, A Devised Theater Approach to Writing Characters. Yes. Would you mind summarizing the topic, giving us the thesis?
Sure. So like a lot of people in game narrative, I have a background in the performing arts, if that also wasn't evident from like the 30 seconds you've heard me talk already. So before I made video games, I trained extensively to be specifically a stage performer and an opera singer at that. That was my like main avenue. And one of these skills that we are taught when we are learning to engage with a character is character interviewing. And that is everything from sitting down with a character and asking, like, who are you? Like, what are you about? And the idea is that by asking the character these questions and sort of quote unquote listening for the character's answer, you have this cool, like, creative process with the character where they also help make themselves. So I have brought this technique from my background into games, and it's just a natural part of writing for me. I ask my characters, like, what do you think about this? Like, what do you want to say here? And I kind of have these constant conversations with my characters, and I've routinely gotten the feedback on my work that my character work is really wonderful, and that just fills me with so much joy. So I wanted to share, as part of this kaleidoscope, my own technique for how I do that and how I help. Well, I don't really necessarily do it all. That's the whole point, is that I feel like they help create themselves, and it creates a really dimensional character. So in my article, I also have a list of questions that you can ask if you're not really sure where to start. Sometimes characters, it depends on how their personality, right? Like, some are going to be more shy and they might not want to ask your questions, but as you get to, or answer your questions, but as you get to know them, they might become more chatty, or they trust you more. And so they become more forthcoming. Or you might have a character who's a total chatterbox, and the way that they answer your questions, if you imagine like mannerism or their facial expressions, like that's also super valuable information. So it's a cool process. I love doing it. And I'm really thrilled that it got to be included in the narrative kaleidoscope.
So I love this. I think this is really cool. I'm very into theater, though I never did all that much. And I'm certainly not as much as you, but I'm struggling to visualize it. So I want to visualize it, right? So you're sitting down with your character who we're pretty sure is not actually in the room with you. So what does that mean in practice? Like, do we have a stuffed toy? Do we talk to the stuffed toy? Do you do it in front of a mirror? Do you pull a funny voice? Like, what in practice on an actual day-to-day, assuming the character is not actually visible to you, which I am assuming.
No, I mean, they're not. Unless you, like, you know, already have them, like, rendered in the engine and you can, like, look at them. But for me, like, I imagine that this is a little bit different for everyone. You could probably, if you wanted, you could, you know, put a little a little, you know, something on your desk, like, you know, rubber ducking style, right? And imagine them. With me, I just sort of picture the character in my mind's eye, and I might not have a ton to go off of. Like, maybe I've got concept art, and I sort of just imagine that. Or I just kind of have, even if I can't picture, like, a face or anything, I just have this sort of, like, I almost imagine, like an amoeba-looking shape of, like, this is what they are. But what's really important to me is getting their voice as opposed to physically what I see. It's more like, mm-hmm. what do I hear from them? When I say voice, I should be very clear. This can sometimes literally be in relation to what their voice sounds like for, you know, for casting purposes. Like, what kind of voice do I imagine them having? But when I say voice, it's a little bit more comprehensive than that. It's like, how do they talk? Are they forthcoming? Are they bold? Mm-hmm. What kind of words do they use? Are they very posh? Or are they, like, more, you know, down to earth with their language? That's the kind of stuff that I'm listening for. Yeah.
So when you're listening, are you doing this in your head or are you doing it out loud? Like, are you doing the voices like my dad when he read me Winnie the Pooh as a kid, or is this a purely kind of getting in the zone sort of thought process experiment for you?
For me, it is definitely internal. I'm definitely one of those writers, though, where, like, you will catch me reading lines out loud back to myself to make sure they sound natural. Or if I'm doing, like, a big script read, I am absolutely doing voices, okay? Like, I am not, like, yes, I'm doing voices. What do you take me for? No, I'm kidding.
Okay, okay. Like, there's an opportunity to do some voices. We're going to seize it. Yeah.
No, absolutely. But when it comes to, yeah, I'm mostly just doing it in my head. However, I've done this for a really long time. I was trained on this technique. I think I was literally like 12 when I was first learned how to do this. So I've been doing it for a while. But if you are new to it, you might find it to be helpful to literally ask these questions out loud and try to verbalize, like, as if the character is speaking through you, if that feels more natural. It's all about what feels the most natural to you, because that'll also give you the most natural sounding dialogue and the most, you know, natural feeling character.
Yeah. It's all about sort of making space for the character to kind of come alive before you start trying to squeeze them into the plot and the story and the function of them. It's to give that character just a sense of being.
Yeah, because so often in games, you know, as writers, we have these mechanical functions of a character. Like, oh, even when it comes to, you know, this character has utility within the plot. Maybe they help you craft an item or whatever. They're a party member. We think of them in an almost mechanical sense. So yeah, allowing them to bring themselves to the table and help in their own creation, I think is a really unique space to kind of let them breathe, and it helps them feel more real.
This is very similar to the question I was going to ask, actually, but I suppose let me take it in a slightly different direction, which is this is a great technique. The method of really visualizing and treating your characters with as if they're fully real only helps you, right, in trying to imagine a universe that could feel lived in. Back in my, I suppose, youth, when I was aspiring to be a science fiction author, I had heard this all the time from authors of books, right? The novel writers, right? Where you have a lot of space often to see a character in lots of different perspectives, usually, right? Whereas when I came into games, I remember being surprised that that characters are often there to serve some sort of purpose. And you mentioned their mechanical purpose. Like, the classic example might be an armorer who improves your weapons or something, right? Mm-hmm. But not quite that. I feel like amongst games writers, I usually hear about what their plot purpose is. Or you'll start with, like, what job does this character need to do for the story? Right. This technique seems maybe a little opposed to that, right? Because if you... Has it usually been the case, I suppose, let me put it this way, has it usually been the case in your experience that you receive a character and they can play almost any role or have almost any emotional valence to them? Or is it the case that you get someone, they need to be the antagonist in this case, the question is maybe just what flavor of antagonist they are? How does that work for you?
Right, I mean, so it's not necessarily, I guess this approach isn't necessarily opposed to, because it is true that in games, when we are often given our characters already, even if they're just kind of a nascent form, right? Of like, you know, this character does this, this is their function in the plot, and maybe this is the kind of,
exactly.
Here's some keywords. So I would say, you know, in true theater kid format, I would say that this is more of a yes and approach, where it's like, okay, I have these stipulations in mind. What can I then add to that? So sometimes I'll literally go to the character,
right.
And I'll be like, all right, so here's what you got to do. How do we get there? Or like, what do you think?
Okay,
about
I see.
What do you feel about that? Like, I think,
yeah, maybe you might ask about method. I see.
Exactly.
Yeah, interesting. Or like the way, because you can have Gannon and be like, what if Gannon tells you that he just wants to paint, like, you know, tie daisies together or something? Like, that's just not going to work for yours for the Zelda game.
I would
game,
love
right?
that for him. But yeah, no, it's definitely
he seems he could use a break, right?
yeah, it's definitely, you have to, like, you know, when you approach a character in this strategy, you are working together with them to create them as an experience, right? So sometimes, like, I'm like, all right, we got this feedback from production. How are we gonna get there? And I feel like the character can sometimes be like, well, I guess I would want to do this. And I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. Let's do that. So even though, like, I'm technically a writer, I truly feel like I am actually, somewhat at, like, low key at the whims of these concepts that just kind of show up at my computer when I sit down.
I love this. It just, like, being in your head just sounds so much fun. Like, that's just because I was kind of interested in an aspect which Saga touched on. It is like, how much do you think as a writer, but this perhaps is tied up with how much freedom you have just where you happen to sit within projects and things like that, but between plot and character, because, you know, some writers say, oh, I start from the characters and I see where they go, and then I try and hope that they do something interesting. And some characters are like, these are the 19 things that the plot has got to do, and if the characters won't do it, I'm going to force them to. And it feels to me like most writers have to do both, right? But, like, one of them is sort of starting from a very emotional point of view and a very humanities first point of view, and the other one is kind of this logical problem solving clockwork machine approach. And it feels to me like the kind of approach that you're talking about is very much not the problem-solving approach, but obviously sometimes it really has to be. Mm-hmm. I was kind of interested into, like, how much freedom do your characters have to kind of just to flip? Like, if production comes along and says, look, this enemy is simply too fast, then do you sit down with your character and say, right, we need to consider,
how,
like,
could you be slower?
Yeah, we could give you a wooden leg, we could make you drunk, like, and the characters, like, I have this image of this character in your head going, maybe I'm a pirate.
It does depend, right? The further I get into this career, I really do feel like it depends is the answer to, like, every single question ever, but it is kind of true.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I'm very lucky in that, I often, when I'm brought onto projects, like, I have historically had, like, a decent amount of freedom when it comes to that kind of thing. Mm. But it really depends on when I'm brought in. Because studio, as a freelancer, when a studio brings me in, sometimes they're like, here's a character, and low-key, we've already had this character designed for a really long time. And then I'm like, okay, cool. And I will work with what's already there. And then I kind of bring my approach to it. Because, yeah, a lot of times you're given these little pieces to already work with. And I guess that would be, like, the problem-solving piece that you mentioned. And, I mean, it really depends on the project, because sometimes it's like, we just need to get this done. We need to, you know, tie this up in a nice bow, and I will sit down with the character and go into problem solving mode, and I'll be like, all right, how are we gonna get to here, what we need? And sometimes the character's like, yeah, well, maybe I would do this, or maybe I would probably feel more comfortable doing something more like this, to try to find that option that works. Although my favorite thing, honestly, is when a character that I think I know really, really well gives me something completely out of left field. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you'd probably do this, right? And they're like, no. I actually would want to do this instead. Like, that makes them feel so alive to me. So sometimes, like, the real magical moments happen when you do have those sort of, your back's up against the wall a little bit, and you're like, all right, we got to make this work. How are we going to make it work? And sometimes they'll surprise you.
I want to press into this. I'm so glad you said this, because this is what I like, because I want to make more use of this technique. And I immediately see myself trying to be too smart with myself, I suppose, right? Like, I immediately see myself speaking on behalf of the character and then starting to become unsure whether I'm authentically giving the right response for that character, or whether I'm just sort of giving them, like, I'm getting a response that just, like, I happen to want. And it strikes me that with what sounds like an incredible background of training that you have, you perhaps are really, really strongly able to keep these forces separate. But for me, it's like all a bunch of mashed potatoes. So how does someone who's like reading your article, how do they make sure they're getting a true response from that character? So that when they surprise you, it's worth following. It's worth chasing.
Yeah, I think, so much of my writing process goes down to trust, honestly. And that's trust with myself and trust with my characters. I used to be like, when I was making the transition from studying opera to then getting an English degree, I'm sure you will be absolutely shocked to know that I'm like a very type A person, and many people in games we tend to be very perfectionistic, right? I remembered like feeling like I was always white knuckling it, you know, being like, oh, this has to be right and this has to be perfect and this, I have to get it right. And I found the more I did that, the less like my writing flowed. It felt like, you know, it's like I had a writing pedagogy teacher who taught me so much about the process of building your writing. He was like, you know, if you're constantly shutting, you're twisting the faucet closed, water's not going to flow. And I thought about that a lot. And I was like, all right, well, what if I just did the opposite? What if I just, I refer to my writing process as like, I am reaching a hand out into the dark, and I am trusting 100% that something is going to reach back and it's going to make sense. And I never question that. I never question that something's going to reach back and it's going to make sense. And it always does. And so it's like, I go to these characters and I say to them, can, you know, what do we want to do about this? And when they give me an option, even if it's one that I am surprised by, I'm like, all right. And that's what I do to tell me more about that. Like, let's go. I trust you with this. With this this view that, and this need that you have. And even if it doesn't end up going where we want it to, I feel like showing that trust to that character that, like, all right, I'm willing to go with you on this. Like, that's a good trust building exercise between you, the writer, and the character. Trust is a lot of it for me.
I love how much agency you giving to characters and to the people that you're kind of bringing into being in your writing. I think that's glorious, actually, because I think in games we can be very functional in games, like,
so much,
kind of tediously functional. I think it's really nice to see that kind of put into the heart of the process. I guess I want to ask about the times when it's hard, because it feels like this is something you're really quite committed to, but sometimes it must be harder than others, right? Like, so I don't know, if you're writing something where you just need to deliver that exposition, you just need to tell the player some facts, and the character is not necessarily the kind of character who would naturally just list a bunch of facts, so you're almost having to break this character to get them to say what you want. Like, how do you go about dealing with that? How do you make the best of that kind of situation? Or can you always find ways around it? Like, how do you cope with the kind of the times when that expositional conflict really comes into, sorry, that expositional requirement comes into conflict with the character building that you're doing?
Often, like, I feel like if I like just need a character to like lay down some information, I feel like I tell them that, and I'm like, all right, here's all this stuff.
This is the best response you could have said, yeah.
You're so 100% committed to the bit. I love it. It's fantastic.
I mean, that's what I do.
Sorry. Carry on. No, carry on. Please carry on.
No, I literally will I'll just go to the character and I'll be like,
okay,
it's all the stuff we got to convey to the player.
We're working together here. The milestone's coming up. Can you just get it together and give me those barks I've been waiting this whole time?
No, I mean, like, you can, like, to a certain extent, like, you can do that. Like, I've done that. I've been like, all right, girl, we got to write a lot of scenes today. Are we in this together? And, like, the character will be like, let's go. Let's do it. We got this. And
I agree. There is trust, yeah. Like, and I don't want us to be dismissing this, actually, because there's something incredibly powerful to externalizing these forces. Like, so powerful, because what we don't realize is, like, we think we are this linear, coherent stream of thought, let's say, that goes from this thought to that one to the other one. And we don't quite realize that we're really just this, like, weird cloud of constantly competing bits of neurons that are firing back and forth. And if you just sort of give yourself the permission to separate a little bit and even name one part of that, like to think in a different way, you're sort of allowing yourself to set up a creative competition or a competitively creative environment in your mind, right? And that should be able to produce something really good, right? I mean, I suppose maybe one challenge is documentation, I suppose. Like how do you, what are the results of this that you can then deliver to someone? Or is it usually immediately into the script for you from one of these chats?
I can kind of do either. I love writing documentation. I feel like when I do these kinds of like devised theater approaches with my characters, I'm better able to translate it into documentation. I'm like, oh, this character, you know, because I feel like I understand them really well and I understand their depth. And I'm able to then translate that into really clear, ordered documentation that I can then give to other folks. Because I'm like, oh, I really feel like, you know, this character would have this one particular mannerism, and I can write that down and I can give it to, you know, an animator because I've spent that time with that character. So I really enjoy writing documentation. I know that that's a controversial take sometimes among writers. I feel like you either love it or you hate it. I enjoy it. I think it's fun. I feel like this process is a little bit paradoxical in a lot of ways because it's like you almost have to get a little bit silly with it in order to get serious, that makes sense. But I've found that to be very successful, both, you know, on the more like technical side and on the more creative side of things.
I think it's absolutely joyous. I love it. It's riotous and it's joyous. And like, I love what you say about being silly to get serious, because I think that's really true. That on, like, it's very true in theatre. It's very obviously true in theatre, and it's slightly less obviously true in writing. That we are mucking about, like an actor is mucking about on stage playing, but they might end up producing a really powerful, gritty, harrowing piece of drama. But where that starts from is some people pretending to be other people, and, you know, running around with bits of cloth or whatever it is. I love that. It's so nice to bring that kind of playfulness into the into the game space, because ironically, I often feel like we're not a very playful industry in the way we create things, despite that being our focus.
We're very serious.
Do you find that this approach or kind of your, do you, if I've got a sense of your ethos as a writer, and forgive me if I haven't or I've oversimplified, but do you find that studios kind of get with this? Do they find it surprising? Like, is there a sort of broad range of responses to it? Because it sounds to me somewhat unusual in terms of the writers that I've encountered. Not, you know, like,
I mean, except when I'm talking to like my fellow narrative people, I feel like I don't really necessarily surface that a lot of this is happening, just because it is me at my desk, right? So usually it's just like when I turn in, you know, my work, people just read it and are like, cool, I love the depth that character has. And it's like, but, thanks. But
there must be a point where the director says, oh, no, wait, no, he's got to, what's this? And you say, no, the character has to have a hair lip. He just definitely has a hair lip. That's something about him. And they say, no, we can't do that.
The other thing is, because I have a background in theater, I talk so much about like the creation process, but I'm also like, if you've ever done theater or opera or anything at like a professional or like collegiate level, it is brutal. And I'm so used to the director being like, I hated that, let's run it again. And you know what I mean? And so you just have to be so buoyant and be able to just be like, all right, we're not going to do that. All right, cool. That's fine. Like, and not getting too attached to it. So even though I talk a lot about, you know, this very like collaborative process, it's also very important that you're able to say, all right, well, director didn't like that one, so what if we go with something else instead, and then, you know, take it back to the table and so
just keep moving it through.
Otherwise you can become, you know, very precious about very tiny details, because I mean, making games is a collaborative process. That includes, you know, your characters, but also like the people on your team. And if something's not going to work, even if a character really wants it, you got to be able to be like, hey, man, that's not going to work.
Right, yeah.
What do we want to try instead?
These people in the room, these people in the room are real. I'm afraid you're not. So their vote wins. Yeah.
So, actually, weirdly, I think what you've just said feels like a key to me to so much of what you've been talking about here is it must be obvious to you because it's part of how you practice this and clearly part of what you're already used to. But you need to be playful and fun and lighthearted, but also volume oriented, right? Like towards the ability of having these conversations, these sort of extensive conversations, because of the fact that you're in an environment where it might not all come through, right? So you have to sort of play this game of, you don't know how tight the filter is going to be on that particular round. So you do it, you have to be playful, because if you're serious about it, you're going to then be weirdly devastated about a character that you made on a contract job or something, right? And you can't be, I suppose, you know, just to survive. So that feels like quite critical to me, maybe about your approach, your entire energy to this that you bring.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's had like that game or a character in a game that's been, you know, axed or canceled, and it's very sad when that happens, and there's honestly like a grief that happens when that does occur. But it's like, well, I still had this like really meaningful connection with this character and the story, and like that still is meaningful to me. I think it is possible to in that sort of, like you mentioned, like the volume outlook on it. I don't know. For me, I found that has been pretty important, especially, you know, if you're juggling multiple contracts, just being like, okay, we're doing this over here and that over there, and you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
well, I'm actually glad you brought this up again, because I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. It seems since you are freelance now and it sounds like quite deep in that community, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about the typical narrative challenges that tend to come into place when it comes to, say, character work when you're brought onto a project, because you have such little control, surely, about at what stage of that project that comes on. For example, maybe this approach is really good if you're in pre-production and you can be really generative and it's even more powerful then, but that might not be your typical experience. How does it usually go for you?
Well, it honestly really does, like, again, it really does depend on when. Sometimes I'm brought in as like a closer, basically, like a finisher of like, we got to get this done and it's got to get out the door. Yeah. And at that point, I might be like, we need you to finish this character's storyline and like write a bunch of barks for them and just like tie it all up, because it's got to get done. And it's like, okay, sure, I got that. I can run with it. That is like, this approach is scalable. So if I have the documentation of like, all right, here's what I know about this character and their storyline and what I know about everything we need to get done, I can still look at this character who I did not build, right? And I can say, all right, nice to meet you, right? We have to run right now. We have to do all this stuff. And I feel like you can still bring this approach even to like a kind of under pressure environment like that, because it's scalable with the tools that you're given. So I've been really lucky that I've been on a couple projects recently where I've literally been in from pre-pro, and like we can build everything from scratch, and it's been really wonderful. And that's not always the case in the freelance world. So this approach, you know, in order to be my approach, it would have to be scalable.
Makes sense.
Or I wouldn't be a very good freelancer. Mm.
Or you would do it occasionally and instead of as frequently as it sounds like you're able to.
Right,
So that leads me on to something else that I kind of wanted to ask you about, which was sort of more broadly about the development of character and the kind of the discovery of characters. So on projects where you're brought on earlier and you have a bit more, I guess, design over the characters, how do you find approaching sort of the design of a cast of characters? So, you know, you have multiple people and they need to kind of play off each other and intersect well. And like, I've seen various writers who approach that very mechanically in terms of like, this thing prods that thing. And I've seen writers who are very kind of casual about it. Like, how do you go about that? How do you think about that process of bringing together an interesting cast?
Well, yeah, I think you have to think about each character holistically and the whole at the same time is kind of the approach that I would take, probably, in that, like, if I was sitting down, like, in a writer's room, even, which is its own cast, right, in its own way, when you think about a writer's room, right, we are all individual writers with our own individual strengths, and we're all working together to tell the same story, while your cast in your game is doing the exact same thing. So they are almost like the double of the concept of the writer's room. So I often like to sort of sit down and think about what would be a complete group. And often, you know, like if I'm working in RPGs, which I do sometimes, there's like a main party maybe that you think about. And oftentimes those will each have like their own mechanical purpose and their own narrative purpose. And then I think about like, all right, if I was going to show up at like, I don't know, a small gathering or something like that, what are the kinds of people I'm going to meet in that scenario? And I just think about all the different shades of it, because they need to be unique so that two characters don't sound the same or like feel the same. And they also then, when you line them up next to each other, it feels like there aren't any like gaps of like, oh, do we have a character who has... you know, maybe they're a little bit more stony at first and then they become warmer. You know, maybe there's a character who's just an absolute ball of sunshine all the time. And then, of course, like, are they hiding something? You know, that kind of thing where you make sure that each one, their core concept is unique. And then all of those create a unique core concept as the cast as a whole. So I try to, I feel like, look at both at the same time in order to create a unique group of individuals who also play well together. And that includes thinking about their relationships, right? Like, do these characters like each other? Do they not? And it's okay if they don't like each other. Like, you're going to have that polarity in order to create drama a lot of times. So I just try to keep... Like, I don't want to be like... I try to think about everything all the time. But, like, low-key, I try to think about everything all the time.
Okay, so
I'm just trying to
imagine it through, and I'm thinking, okay, if we're designing a cast of 5 people, that's good. If we're designing a cast of 30, Anna is going to explode because she's thinking about all the things all the time.
I mean obviously, like, I was talking about main cast. If the main cast is 30, I'm probably going to be talking to the director about about scope.
And you'll have a team. You'll have a team, right? It wouldn't just be one. Of course.
Absolutely.
I wonder if we can, to the extent that you're able to, and I wonder if we can maybe get like a bit specific, I suppose. Like, is there something that you could share about a case in which you've done this and the process of how it went for, say, a particular character or a particular genre? I don't want to sort of suggest one to you because I don't know which ones you typically work with, but I assume that it might vary a fair bit based on what if you're doing, you know, like a big RPG, or if you're doing something where everyone is only kind of emoting in light ways. If you're able to.
Ooh, let's see. I feel like a more comprehensive look would be on a smaller project, just because I often do have more control. One project where I sort of brought this approach was a really small indie title called The Foglands. It was an anti-Western. So it was in Western style, but it actually was very critical of a lot of the typical themes that are found in Westerns, which are like, woof, you know? So a lot of the characters, we really intentionally wanted them to be authentic to who was actually there in the Old West. So it was a lot of, like, we had a good amount of women in our cast. We had people of color. One of the other writers on the project was Navajo. Like, it was very cool in that way. And we intentionally wanted to subvert a lot of expectation, because we were trying to question a lot of the typical things that you see in Westerns, which is ultimately comes down to, like, a lot of imperialism. So by giving the characters the space within the overall plot to be like, all right, like, what would you expect a character like this to be? And then not that. So, like, that was a really fun, and that approach really worked on that project because of it. So, you know, you've got...
Also, you would ask a character, you'd be like, you would probably know that in a typical Western thing, your type of character might do this thing. How could we do something different? You'd ask them that like that?
I can. Sometimes, like, I don't feel like I have to have that comprehensive of, like, I feel like sometimes they already kind of understand the assignment. Right, because they are a figment of my imagination. so I don't have to, usually do that. But I mean, I can do that. I'd be like, all right, well, that would be, you know, in an anti-Western, what would that look like? And, you know, asking that kind of question. And that was really successful on that project. Ultimately, like, it was a tiny indie game, but apparently it has, like, a really solid audience that still plays it, and they just are always raving about the characters and the character writing, and
love that.
That just makes me so happy that I feel like it really came through.
So that's something that's interesting. Like, I think when you're writing in kind of historical contexts, especially if it's in a culture that you don't necessarily 100% just know, like, you know, and that must come all the time because as writers, that's what we're doing. I guess my question is, how can you tell when you've reached the limit of what you know? How can you tell when you need to just go off and do some research? Because obviously we all research all the time, but when you're kind of working with your characters to try and understand, okay, how are you going to respond to this? Or how are you going to respond to that? How does it feel when you reach the edge of what you know and you need to put some more fish in that well before you can, like, carry on with the process? How do you find that?
That's a good question. So there was a character in the Foglands whose name is Shandine, which is a Navajo name. So she is Navajo. And a lot of times, like, I would really focus on, like, I would write a lot of just, like, stuff that wasn't necessarily related to her specific identity, I would really lean into that. And then if there was anything that, I felt, Anna felt unsure about, I would notice that, like, Shandine, who's usually incredibly chatty, this character, she had more lines than anyone in the game. She was just, I mean, yammering. She would start to get, like, almost nervous. And I would see it in, like, her responses that she's like, and I'd be like, oh, okay, gotta ask Madeline about that one. Like, you know, this is, like, as a character, they are an extension of me, and I feel like you have to be very honest about yourself, about stuff that you don't know, whether that's historical information, whether that's cultural information, whatever, I feel like, because they're an extension of me, if I'm not sure, like, the character will almost seem unsure. I can respond to that and just be like, okay, we need to do more. We need to look there.
Because one thing I always think...
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, one thing I always think is quite interesting in writing, especially when it's kind of something authentic or something that wants to kind of capture some kind of authenticity, is... on the one hand, as writers, we have to be really confident, right? Because we are writing stuff down and asserting this is good and it's worth reading. But at the same time, we also have to be quite vulnerable and aware that actually we don't necessarily know what we're talking about. We can't just run off the assumptions that we happen to have.
Right.
You know, you can't just wake up on a Tuesday morning and say, I'm going to write Chicago people because I know all about Chicago people because I met one once. It doesn't work like that. And I always think it's quite interesting how writers navigate that kind of confidence and vulnerability on a day-to-day basis, do you know what I mean? Not just as not in a kind of grand theoretical way, but actually literally it's Tuesday morning and you're not sure if you know what you're doing or not. Like, how do you get through that?
My writing pedagogy teacher in college, his name was Brian McTague. I believe he still works at Virginia Commonwealth University. He would talk to us about a healthy sense of ego, because there's a sense of ego that is unhealthy, right? And then you get into diva behavior. There's a sense of ego that is healthy about your writing. And that is what's really important to develop. So I always tell people, I'm very sure that I am not the best writer in the world. In fact, I do not want to become the best writer in the world, because that kind of sounds miserable, low-key, and would mean that I was not learning and I was not creating anymore, because I would have reached, the top. But what I am sure is what I can, deliver to people. And I'm sure about, if you need 300 barks by next week, I can probably get them to you, that's that healthy sense of okay, I know who I am and I know what I'm about. And when you have that kind of sense of healthy ego, I feel like it's a lot easier to juggle the vulnerabilities of, okay, I'm going to be genuinely real about something that's really hard. And I am confident that I can articulate it, because I know what I'm trying to say, and I'm confident that I have the ability to say it. I might just need, figuring out how exactly, I'm going to need edits, but having that sense of I can deliver this, and I know I can, and I know what I'm trying to achieve, I think is probably how I try to approach it. Because, you hope what you're writing is going to resonate with someone. And you, again, it's that trust factor of I just have to trust that it's going to find the right people, and I have to trust that I can do this. I think there's a healthy amount of trust, amount of trust in healthy ego as well, where it's okay, I know what I'm doing. And I know that I can probably do this. I might not know how. But that's been really, I feel critical to not only just being a game writer, which is already a very difficult industry, but my work as a freelancer as well, is I feel I know what I can deliver to someone. So if I talk to a team and they're here's what we need, I can be honest with them about if I can deliver that or if I think someone else should deliver it. And then I usually give them a list of names of people I think would be a better fit, just being, being honest with who you are and what you're doing. There's a lot of psychological elements to it. Go ahead.
Definitely. Yeah. No, I was just thinking, so for writers who are not quite as far along their kind of career or developmental journey as perhaps you are, how do you cultivate this? How do you cultivate this kind of, because you talk about knowing what you're doing and what you can do and who you are, and that's a good place to have reached, definitely. But yes. If you don't know who you are or what you're doing, how do you move? Do you remember that process when you were learning it? I'm trying to think I got through it. And I think I think I spent a long time thinking that I was really, really good and no one was paying any attention, and then had this blinding moment of revelation when I realized I wasn't very good, actually, and I needed to learn. And that was game changing for me. But by then I'd done a lot of practice through this sheer confidence, which I don't know where it came from. I was just born with it, I suppose, but it was wrong. Right. And that was my process. And I can't recommend it to anyone because it wasn't much fun. But how do you build that process?
So I remember, I feel like with your experience of I had it all together and then I had this big moment. I feel like there's either that or the other one that I see a lot, which is I'm not confident in anything that I'm doing. And I, that kind of concern about one's abilities to the point where it can actually become debilitating. And that does happen, especially among young writers. What I'd really I remember for me, so much of it was about curiosity. And a lot of this approach is actually goes into this one psychological model that's called internal family systems. It's a clinical psychological model of understanding one's mind that basically, it goes off of the idea of curiosity And it even works a lot like my writing process, where you think of your emotions as a, like, it's like a part of you, right? Like, because when you're sad, you're not all sad, right? There's a part of you that's sad, and you think about that part, and what does that part want? And I think a lot about the aspect of curiosity. So if you're just starting out, getting curious about, okay, well, what can I do? What do I feel like I can do well? What do I feel like I can't do well? And just having that sort of gentle curiosity, even though it feels like a real softly approach, is actually like the backbone, I feel like, of so much of how I've learned to write. Is just being like, what if I tried this? What if I did that? And just doing that day after day after day after day, like, actually builds a really solid foundation. So just getting curious with yourself and, you know, can I do this? Maybe I can, maybe I can't. If you can, awesome. If not, there's other things, you know, you can try something else. That's all right. So it's just that. Kind of compassionate take on it, I feel like.
I know. I really like that sense of curiosity, because it's like that idea of exploration in a non-judgmental kind of framework.
Yes.
Like, whatever you discover, it's valuable and it's good, and you're going to be going to get better from it. I think that's really positive, and it's so much nicer than the, well, you've got to meet this goal, and then you've got to meet that goal, and then you've got to do one of these and do seven of those. I really, really like that.
I think writing is very intimidating to a lot of people, both like as a hobby and professionally. And for me, like, I've definitely felt that in some instances, but I think, you know, it can be really, really fun and just really, you know, like, just goofing off and playing around. And like I said, you got to get silly to get serious. You know, I think it can be that as well. And it can be this really cool journey of like self-discovery and building your voice and the voices of your characters. Like, I know it might sound a little juvenile, but ultimately, like, this industry is really tough, and it is this approach that has allowed me to like have done this for 6 years. You know, it's one of those weird paradoxes.
I don't think it's weird at all. I think it makes a tremendous amount of sense. And you've sort of taken us through an approach why you might want to explore it if you're a writer who hasn't done it, and reminded us, brought it all the way back to why we should be curious about our own selves. So I cannot think of a more perfect clarion call for us to end on here. We will give you back your time, Anna, and just say a big thank you from John and I for joining us for today's episode. Please, listeners, join us next week when we will be having another wonderful writer on to discuss their contribution to the Game Narrative Kaleidoscope. Thank you very, very much, and see you next time.
Goodbye.